Every election cycle since most of us can remember has had an immigration component to it. Remember things like kids in cages and migrant caravans headed to the southern border?
How could you forget it? I'm Sage Miller.
And I'm Sean Higgins. This week on State Street, we're talking immigration. The Utah legislature is taking this issue head on this year, introducing a whole suite of bills. They're trying to curb illegal immigration and crack down on people who are in Utah without legal status and commit additional crimes.
So we'll find out what is the goal of these immigration bills and how one immigration lawyer is thinking about it. Sean, give me a little bit of a refresher. How did we get here?
Well, Utah obviously has a long history of immigration that goes all the way back to the first pioneers. But for the purposes of this episode, let's start in 2010.
2010. Got it.
That's when this thing called the Utah Compact comes into being.
Oh, yes. That was a big deal. Not just here, but nationally, too. Editorials galore from outlets like the New York Times and the Washington Post.
Yep. It's laid out as a roadmap to guide the discussion around immigration in the state. It has five pillars: federal solutions, law enforcement, families, economy, and a free society.
Sounds like a lot of fancy words. What did it really mean?
Well, basically, it is a way to encourage common sense bipartisan solutions to the problem while staying compassionate and welcoming to people who want to live here. Very Utah way, if you ask me. It was created in 2010 and then reaffirmed by a bunch of state, political, and business leaders in 2019.
Okay, but I gotta say, the vibe feels pretty different from how we're hearing about immigration now. There's a lot of emphasis on crime, and are we sticking to that compact?
For sure about the emphasis on crime. All we really have to do is look back to the 2024 election. President Trump was very outspoken about his plans to shut down the southern border, stop crime, and, in his words, deport everyone who is here without legal status. That's like 11 million people, by the way.
Okay, that is a lot of people. And I know Governor Spencer Cox was on board with that. He said he would support Trump's plans on deportation. And it seems like the legislature is too.
You're not wrong. To help us get a grip on everything coming down the pipe this session, I talked with our colleague, Macy Lipkin. Macy Lipkin, you are a bilingual reporter based in northern Utah for us here at KUER. Thank you so much for joining State Street.
Excited to make my debut.
So there is a whole suite of legislation this session. Some bills are directly related to immigration. Others are more focused on what Republicans are calling public safety, but do have an immigration component to them. And this has been identified as a top issue for Republican lawmakers in 2025. So just give us a rundown of what lawmakers have been focusing on.
All right, here's a quick list of things that have been going on in the legislature. There's a bill that would allocate emergency funding for schools that have seen a really sharp increase in the number of beginner English language learners. There's a move to make it easier to deport people who've committed certain crimes. There's a push to lower the threshold for what size company has to verify workers' legal status. There is a move to tax international money transfers or remittances for people without a valid ID. And there's another bill that would end the state CHIP program. This is the Children's Health Insurance Program. It's low-cost insurance for kids who are here without legal status.
So a pretty wide swath of bills under this greater immigration umbrella. Let's dig a little bit deeper into a couple of these. Give us an idea of what you have had your eyes on this session.
Yeah, I have gotten really in the weeds with this quirky intersection of state and federal law. So Republican Representative Candace Perucci wants to increase the maximum penalty for violent misdemeanors and DUIs by one day. So it's currently a maximum of 364, and she's proposed raising it to a year for certain Class A misdemeanors. That matters because certain crimes get bumped up to what the federal government calls aggravated felonies if they have a penalty of at least 1 year. An aggravated felony can be grounds for automatic deportation. The bill has changed a little bit. This is HB 226 for anyone who wants to look it up. It started out as a blanket increase for all Class A misdemeanors. That got some opposition because that's a really big range of things. The current version of the bill just raises the penalty for persons crimes, so violent Class A misdemeanors and DUIs.
Gotcha. So from what I understand, that this a blanket increase of all Class A misdemeanors, that encompasses everything from nonviolent offenses like theft, I'm assuming, to more violent crimes.
Yeah, that's right. And we've kind of left that version behind.
And I know you've also done some reporting on this CHIP debate, this Children's Health Insurance Program. Where are those conversations at right now?
So it's low-cost health insurance for kids who don't qualify for Medicaid. We're talking about the program that is specifically for kids without legal status. Proponents like Democratic Senator Luz Escamilla say that it ends up saving the state money. Basically, providing health insurance is cheaper than having hospitals left with all these unpaid bills. But Representative Neil Walter proposed ending the state CHIP program for kids without legal status. And he actually voted to start the program back in 2023. But he told me that at the time he didn't fully understand that he was sending state money to kids without legal status. And he wanted to prioritize funding for people who are here legally. But one more thing that's been maybe less controversial is this move to provide emergency funding to schools that have seen a really sharp uptick in English language learners.
And one of the most interesting debates that I've seen in this issue is surrounding this E-Verify program. For people who are unfamiliar, E-Verify is a website, a free website run by the federal government where you can enter basic info like your name, your date of birth, and your social security number, and it will electronically verify that you are legally allowed to work in the United States. As it stands right now here in Utah, if a company has 150 employees or more, they're required to use this E-Verify website. There's a proposal to lower that threshold to companies that only have 5 or more employees. What would this proposed change mean for people on the ground and the companies that it could be affecting?
I can't speak to every industry, but I know based on estimates from the Migration Policy Institute and the Utah Department of Workforce Services, roughly 9% of construction workers in the state are here without legal status. And you know, Governor Cox has this ambitious plan to build 35,000 new starter homes by 2028. I talked with his housing czar, Steve Waldrop, about the potential impact of deportation, and he was pretty upfront. He said getting rid of a large chunk of the workforce could lead to increased housing costs, at which point a starter home may no longer be a starter home.
So traditionally, Utah has been seen as a little bit of a red state unicorn on the issue of immigration. I'm thinking about the Utah Compact on Immigration in 2019, but it feels like something has changed since then. What have you been hearing from people on the Hill about how this issue is now talked about?
Yeah, I was really interested in this because the legislature changed the penalty for a Class A misdemeanor down to 364 days. Back in 2019. So I asked that question of Democratic Representative Andrew Stoddard. He said the pendulum is swinging back.
You know, I heard this bill in committee. I remember voting for it. And the sponsor was very clear that this was based on immigration consequences. And no one cared. And I see that a lot on issues where the pendulum just swings both ways. And unfortunately, we're on the pendulum swinging back part of immigration and criminal consequences.
And just a note, Stoddard did vote yes on the criminal amendment bill that raises the penalty for certain misdemeanors. Initially, he was really concerned that it lumped together all misdemeanors, but it sounds like he got that worked out with the substitute that only affects violent crimes and DUIs. I also asked that what changed question of a representative who supported that change to 364 days and recently voted to change it back. He said this is about reeling things back in. Here's Republican Representative Val Peterson.
And I will tell you that 6 years ago, in many cases, we rolled some things back too far in the state of Utah. And so in some cases, we are moving things back to where they were previously.
And this debate about immigration and what to do about it, it's a lot bigger than Utah. I asked that question, again, what has changed? Why is the legislature swinging back? Of an attorney who was involved with the change down to 364 days. And he said it was a bandwagon effect, that lawmakers want to show they're supporting President Trump's crack down on immigration.
Macy Lipkin, thank you so much for your insight and joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
That was KUER Northern Utah reporter Macy Lipkin.
We're going to take a quick break. When we're back, what one immigration lawyer thinks about the legislature's proposals and how they could impact her clients.
You're listening to State Street.
Support for State Street comes from the Hinckley Report on PBS Utah. I'm Jason Perry, director of the Hinckley Institute of Politics. The Hinckley Report is Utah's weekly political roundup, bringing together Utah's top journalists, political thinkers, and lawmakers to help you understand how politics impacts your life. Listen to the Hinckley Report wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to State Street. I'm Sage Miller.
And I'm Sean Higgins. So we talked a little bit about the Utah Compact earlier in the episode. That's the document that's supposed to provide a roadmap for Utah leaders when it comes to the issue of immigration.
Things have changed a little bit over the last few years. President Trump won the 2024 election. Now Utah lawmakers are super focused on curbing illegal immigration in the state. And we've heard from some Utah Republican voters that the southern border is their top issue.
Sure is. I heard that in our voter panels we put together.
That's the big picture. But how are people who deal with these issues every day reacting to all of this?
To answer that question, I turned to immigration lawyer Nicole Pitt White. Her firm represents hundreds of clients of all immigration statuses. Nicole Pitt White, thank you so much for joining State Street.
Thank you for having me.
So let's talk a little bit about the suite of legislation proposed by the Utah legislature. What do you make of all of these bills that have been introduced this year?
It's vastly disappointing. I feel like in the past we had a great camaraderie, so to speak, with the legislature. They were willing to work with us on certain things. We helped work with them. Especially with the change in misdemeanors and the potential sentence they could have being potentially changed to go back up to 365 days, there's a lot of really severe immigration consequences for things like that. And it feels like with this new Trump administration coming in, our legislature's kind of transformed and become more MAGA-focused, which has been really disappointing and disheartening to see.
I want to step back in time a little bit. The Utah Compact was reaffirmed in 2019. This was this big document that a lot of leaders, both in the political realm and the business realm, signed on to that was really kind of seen as a roadmap for a red state like Utah to help address this issue of immigration. And the approach to immigration seems to have swung back in the other direction when we're talking about 2025. Why do you think this in particular has changed?
We're in a time where a lot of people have a lot of different opinions about the quote unquote right way to come to the United States. I've unfortunately witnessed it in my own client population where they're like, well, I came the right way and that's how I was able to fix my papers. But these folks over here, they didn't. They crossed illegally seeking protections and things like that. So of course we need to treat them differently. But what a lot of these folks don't realize is that like they overstayed a visa, which gave them a lawful entry so they could change their status by having a child here. But they technically also broke the law. And it's been interesting to see that mentality become more and more prevalent. And it's been really sad to see personally.
How is your work different this year in 2025 in particular?
Well, I went from having maybe 4 or 5 consultations a week to my entire calendar being full in a matter of days. I've encountered more and more people telling me they're terrified to leave their homes, which is absolutely tragic. I've had folks tell me, I want to schedule a consultation on the phone with you because I'm scared to come in person and talk to you. I'm afraid ICE is going to be outside an immigration law firm looking for me or something like that. I've seen other attorneys have clients arrested in or outside courthouses when they've gone to criminal hearings. I've heard of folks just being absolutely terrified to go to church because they were told ICE would be there. So your stress level as an immigration attorney in this moment is definitely higher as well for all of those reasons.
laws and bills can seem abstract when they're being discussed and passed. Can you help me bring this down to a bit of a more of an individual level? How could some of these laws affect a specific client you've had?
I would refer back to the change in misdemeanor time potentially going back up to 365 days.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit more about that. How would that impact an individual that you've worked with that you can think of?
So something like, I've had clients that have been involved in like altercations with family members where someone got mad and called the police and they ended up getting charged with a domestic violence when most of us would have been let go with a slap on the wrist, generally because we're white. They ended up in the system. And if they end up getting a 365-day sentence, even though it's classified as a misdemeanor, it can push them into territory where for immigration, it's considered much more seriously. So while this person may have been previously eligible to adjust through a family member or something like that, they can become ineligible for a lot of different forms of relief and protection. No person is perfect. Some make honest mistakes. I've had some clients have some minor theft charges as teenagers that now, because of the Lake and Riley Act, which was federal, can face very serious immigration consequences, potentially resulting in their indefinite detainment until they're able to regularize their status. And I've seen that association even trickle down here in Utah where they're like, well, they had a DUI, so we should definitely deport them. And while I definitely don't support DUIs, sometimes a DUI here is a death sentence if they get sent back to their home country. And so I think that punishment doesn't necessarily fit the crime either.
Is there any other legislation you're watching that could have a big impact on your clients?
There is one. It's a change to the CHIP program as it currently stands. So CHIP is the Children's Health Insurance Plan. And it's a benefit for kids from low-income families so they can access basic health care. Right now, there is a bill that would make children that are here either undocumented or with some sort of pending status ineligible for these benefits. And Utah historically has always had, you know, a lot of their budget left over. We have a lot of money that we could spend to help these kids. So I'm really hopeful that that bill doesn't pass because these children, even if you disagree with the choices of their parents, were brought here ultimately by someone else in a position of power. And I would like to see them still be able to be protected and receive the care that they need while that they're here.
So what do you think of the polarization on the issue of immigration happening, not just in 2025, but this goes all the way back to before the election in 2024 and even before then?
They're an easy target to blame when things have gone wrong. Like they're the folks that are quote unquote stealing our jobs, that are committing crimes and things like that. But when you look at the big scheme of things, they're the people doing a lot of jobs that people don't want to take, that are doing manual labor and things like that. Their rate at which they commit crime and recidivism of repeat crime is also extremely, extremely low. And it's just really disappointing to see that they just become the finger that we point at when anything goes wrong.
This issue seems to be one that props up whenever there's a big election. There's always an immigration focus. What do you think needs to be done to actually have some meaningful impact and create less of a political quagmire, for lack of a better term, when we look at this?
Yeah, immigration is the football everyone likes to pass off. I think it would be extremely helpful to get some settled law or status for Dreamers, especially to even qualify to be a Dreamer or a DACA recipient. They can't have any serious criminal history. I think that right there is an easy sell. They are upstanding citizens that have been here most of their life. I think it would be great, and this isn't something Utah could do. This would need to be done federally, but create some sort of pathway for folks that have been here for years and don't have any serious criminal history, that have paid taxes, abided by our laws, have family members here, and allow them a way to actually get status.
Is there anything Utah could do?
I think that if we could get our state reps to put pressure on the members of Congress from Utah federally, because they are all Republicans, I think that that might be a method to potentially put some pressure on the president and other folks to get those things moving forward. Utah historically has been a pretty immigrant-friendly community. We've accepted higher numbers of refugees than a lot of other areas. So I think if we took that support, not just here at home, but took it to the federal level, we would actually be in a great position to lobby for those changes to be made.
Nicole, thank you so much for your insight on this. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great to speak with you.
That was Utah immigration lawyer Nicole Pitt White. Okay, so Nicole Pitt White is disappointed in the legislature's approach to immigration this session. Why do the Republican sponsors of these bills think they're necessary in the first place?
The most important thing to understand is that Republicans say most of these bills are cracking down on crime. Think of Representative Candace Perucci's sentencing bill. It specifically deals with people who have been convicted and sentenced to prison time. And lawmakers say they're taking a scalpel to this issue, not a sledgehammer. Here's what Perucci said when Republicans held a big press conference before the session to announce most of these bills.
So today we are very careful to focus on criminals. People are committing crimes actively and trying not to mix in, you know, phrases like asylum seekers or people who come here in different statuses. And none of our bills are actually targeting a status, right? They're all focusing on crime. So I feel like we've really tried to thread the needle on this. I mean, we can't help what other groups may or may not be messaging that may or may not be actually true about our bills. But I think we've really tried hard to focus on the criminal element here.
And to be clear, many Democrats say they're on board with cracking down on crime. But they're worried about the fallout and unintended consequences of lumping crime together with immigrants, especially if this might sweep up people who maybe just look different and don't speak English as their first language.
Let's fact check a little on the statistics. How much crime is being committed by immigrants without legal status?
Here's where things get interesting. There was a September 2024 report on this from the National Institute of Justice. That's an official website of the federal government. In a nutshell, it used data from the Texas Department of Public Safety. It estimated the rate at which undocumented immigrants are arrested for committing crimes. The study found that they are arrested at less than half the rate of native-born U.S. citizens for violent and drug crimes, and a quarter the rate of native-born citizens for property crimes. That report isn't online anymore. It was taken down at the end of January by the Department of Justice after President Trump took office.
I also want to point out, Sean, that the Utah Department of Public Safety did a presentation during interim committee a few months before the session started, and they pointed out that the vast majority of crime taking place in Utah is from people born here, born in Utah. So that seems like it falls in line with the Texas study. There's also been protests in support of immigrants since Trump took office and the legislature convened. There was a march through Salt Lake City a couple weeks ago, and several businesses around Salt Lake closed for a day without immigrants, including Rancho Market. Shout out to intern L. Crosley for covering that. And that same day, in St. George, all the way in southern Utah, dozens of people came out in support of immigrants.
You almost can't say it enough. Immigration is an issue that mobilizes people. I'm reminded of something political scientist Leah Murray told me almost exactly a year ago. This was when Spencer Cox and 13 other red state governors went to the southern border. Texas was fighting with the Biden administration over immigration and border security at that time. Murray called immigration a beautiful election issue because it's so easy to fight about.
Each team knows what its voters, does that make sense, are going to resonate with. And then each team has a political incentive for the narrative not to change.
For just a moment, let's put on our zero-sum political animal hats. What Murray is saying is that both sides have political reasons to avoid addressing immigration in a serious way. So, if families are separated and kids are in cages when Republicans are in charge, it proves that Republicans are the bad guys with bad ideas, so Democrats benefit. And on the flip side, if drugs and crime are coming across the border when Democrats call the shots, that's good for Republicans. It proves Democrats are the bad guys with the bad ideas.
That's not exactly a recipe for solving the problem.
That's right. That does it for this episode of State Street. I'm Sean Higgins.
And I'm Sage Miller. State Street is not possible without a whole lot of people working really, really hard behind the scenes. Our digital team is Jim Hill, Raquel Davis, and Eleanor Gomberg.
David Childs and KUER News Director Elaine Clark are responsible for editing and audio production here at State Street.
And Caroline Ballard is our wonderful executive producer.
See you next week.
Oh, yeah. That was a bit. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
From KUER.